up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, North Bay Stacks and Jacks, I'm Tom Howe. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 51. We got the Fed meeting today and tomorrow, the announcement tomorrow. Nothing's expected to happen, although they seem to be going to grease the way for a little cut in September. The cut we've been waiting for and talking about, 90 gazillion words have gone about this cut. Now it's going to save the world, and everybody's anticipating it. And it's just I can't wait, because I know that everybody I know is credit card interest is going to go flying down, and it's going to be just right for all. What do you think about that, Carl?
Oh yeah, sure. So. My base expectation is that they're going to talk, and do nothing. And simply put, the reason why is that there's no evidence that, quote-unquote, asset protection, which, you know, is not part of their mandate, but we all know it is, right?
It could be the only mandate right now.
Well, but, I mean, you know, we all know that it's... I don't care what people say. I care what they do, right?
Yep.
Because everybody lies, especially when there's either money or power involved. And, gee, that would be both in this case.
Yep.
But the thing is, I mean, you know, you take a look at where the market is right now. You take a look at the yield curve. And I'm especially interested in the bond situation, because, you know, as I've noted for a long time, this situation that we have with the IRX TNX inversion is, I mean, it's never been seen before. I mean, there literally is not a time in the recordation of the market where you can find this pattern. It's not there. So what it's telling us is truly unknown, because you can't look to the past. All right, what else you got? I mean, we've And so you've got that. You've got the employment picture, which is the unemployment rate certainly isn't rising at any kind of significant rate. I mean, is it going up a little bit? Yes, but it was way below the normal full employment level for a long time.
But then again, because of the small number of people there versus people just plain flat out aren't working, that number is kind of almost screwed up.
Well, it is, but the thing is this: if you're not looking, you're not looking. Okay, I mean, whatever the reason is, and this is in.
Oh, but okay, but they you're the one that told me that, or told all of us that they lays out now. The minute you don't get you're not getting your check, they assume you're not looking.
Well, that's true. That's always been there. Okay, but again, this is, you know, the methodology in that report has not changed. Right now, since the 1980s. The methodology in the CPI report has changed dramatically. So,
right,
all right. So, I mean, you can't look at, for example, the inflation data that was produced during the '60s and '70s and the early part of the '80s.
When you actually could believe it.
Well, but you know, before Carter came in, okay, because that was when the really big changes in the CPI index were made, And of course, you know, you can argue that that was done specifically to protect the administration's view and everybody else's view that, well, you know, we really can't be saying that it's so bad as...
You're talking about the substitution piece?
There's a number of things that were changed during that rejiggering. One of them is the hedonic substitution. Yeah, that is a huge problem because it makes like for like essentially impossible. But it... And I understand why they did it. Okay, there's actually a non-nefarious explanation, which is, and I'll just give you a simple example that every listener can understand. Go find yourself a TV, a tube television, tube telly or tube computer monitor that has a CRT in it. It doesn't exist. They're not made anymore. Okay, so if I'm going to give you a comparison against televisions in terms of how much they cost, if the former television was a CRT, what do I do? I can't, right? Because there isn't one. So that was the logic, is that as technology advanced, there were just products that... I mean, you know, if you go back far enough, well, there were horseshoes, all right? I mean, can you still buy horseshoes? Well, I suppose, but how many people do?
Well, if you have a horse, you do.
Well, if you have a horse, but how many people have horses, right? I mean, everybody used to have a horse. Right. So, I mean, that's part of the logic. But the one that irrevocably damaged the CPI, and also, unfortunately, because of the way the PCE and the deflator are computed, and we can't actually see inside those black boxes, those have been irrevocably damaged as well. The bad news isn't there. The bad news is the owner's equivalent rent thing. And that one, the thing with hedonic adjustment is, you know, how many digital cameras am I going to buy in my lifetime, right? However, I'm going to buy housing in one form or another literally every month for the entire time that I'm alive. And on top of that, it's a huge part of the basket. When they went to OER and they put that process in place, they irrevocably damaged the CPI index. And now, by the way, the latest thing that's all over social media, and it's being parroted. There's a very interesting thing that's happened since Harris became coronated as the Democrats' standard bearer for this election cycle. And it ties into what we talk about all the time in the markets. The use of paid shills in social media, I mean... Okay, best example. Kramer! Hi, I'm Kramer. Yeah, right. I mean, anything that man touts, my God, run the other way. In fact, it's so bad that there's actually an inverse Kramer ETF. But, and it doesn't have a bad record either. But the thing is that in the what has been seen in the last couple of weeks is... within seconds, all of a sudden, all over social media, there's all these touts in the political sphere that appeared that are telling us why Kamala Harris is she's better than penicillin. My God, it's the savior of the world. The energy is so high. Every, you know, white guys.
Well, everybody gets their honeymoon.
Well, I understand that, but Chief, what's been discovered is it's not people actually posting what they think. It's being bought.
Why is that a shock to the media world?
It's illegal.
Well, Trump just retweeted something about her where it was AI. It wasn't even her talking.
Musk actually did that.
Musk.
Yeah, Musk did that, and Gavin Newsom tried to attack him on it, and his response was hilarious.
But I mean, there's another man who feels we have this stuff going, and I don't know how you deal with it. You could probably name 10 or 15 people who think they are absolutely above any law in any country.
Oh, not only
that. And he's one of them.
Chief, I've got, look, you know, our primary is August 1st, okay, here in Tennessee. And for a lot of state races, the primary is the election.
Well, like Chicago.
Well, yeah, the primary, but that is the election, okay, for all intents and purposes. So if you actually want to express your opinion as to who you want representing you in, you know, in the state house and things like this, you show up and you vote at the primary. And I have a stack of mailers. There's a candidate.
Sorry, Norb, is this all one party? That, in other words, like here, those are always on the Democratic side. So
No, this is so red that if you ran as a Democrat, you're just
so in other words, even if you're a Democrat, you're gonna take the Republican ballot just so you have somebody to vote for.
Well, yeah. So I mean, the thing is that it does the fact that I'm registered as a Republican mean that I necessarily support their position? No, it means I'd like to have a voice in statewide races.
Right. Well, the same thing, flip side here of the Democrat.
Because
right.
Otherwise, I don't get one. Right.
I get it.
I mean, yeah. Well, we're closed primary, as are a lot of other states. So I can't cross the line in the primary. If I'm not registered as a Republican, I can't. But I cannot vote for the Republican candidates. So Florida was the same way. But which made things interesting when I was a Libertarian Party representative, because being on the EC, I had to be registered as a Libertarian. They would have thrown me out if I didn't.
Yeah. Right?
So that meant my primary vote was basically a nullity. There was nothing I could do about it. But I have a stack of mailers here. There's a state dude. His name's Nicely. He's been in office for quite a long time. And I probably have 30 mailers. Well, this is for a state race. This isn't a federal race.
Well, I would get those. I'd get those here too. We had them. We had ours.
Yeah, but I got like 30 of them.
Yeah,
and so you know what?
You're five and six from the same person.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they're all for the same guy. Okay, but here's the interesting thing. There's a bunch of it. A lot of them are attacks and a hit. He's got competition in this race. Guy that's never, you know, that he does not have a political history. He's trying to unseat him. These mailers are all coming from a super PAC out of D.C. that is a subsidiary of the Club for Growth. Okay, and their stick is school choice. That's their focus. All right, and they've targeted this guy because he voted against a voucher bill in the last session. But all the attacks on him are not on that subject. They say nothing about the vouchers. Nothing. All of it is, this guy voted for in-state tuition for illegals. This guy, nothing about what their actual issue as a super PAC is. Not a word on the flyer.
Carol, if you could, they could be against you, any issue in the world, and if 40 years ago you were caught peeing in the alley after a ball game, it's all going to be about that. You know that.
Well, I can see through this stuff it's a piece of window glass.
What did your buddy George Carlin once say? Look at how dumb the average American is, and half of them are dumber than him.
Yeah, I realize half of them are stupider than that. I'm just waiting for August 1st to come around because, frankly, the stack of hard, and we're not talking about paper either. This is cardstock that these guys are sending.
But this
stuff's expensive.
I'm saying. That's what I would get. This stuff, like, you barely fit in the mailbox, and it is. You're right. It has to be a $2 mailer or more.
Well, yeah. I mean,
Not to mention, well they got to pay some postage.
Well, good God! Now the postage rates haven't gone up. And by
what,
the way,
did the pals get a break? The pals get a break on that? I'm not sure.
Well, you get the bulk rate.
You get the bulk rate. Yeah. Okay.
But actually, by law, it's the political stuff gets the worst rate of like kind and quantity.
The radio. You don't radio. They get the cheapest. Commercial rate that anybody has all day long.
Yeah, but there's, I mean, but it depends on what you're doing, okay? But when it comes to postal stuff, It's, you know, I mean, that cardstock is a funky size because it's not a postcard. Okay, it's, you know, they're big. So, yeah, it's...
Well, that's one of the reasons, when we were on radio and not podcast, we would constantly get memos, especially when I was buying time. We would we'd always get memos from the people saying, absolutely do not, you know, give somebody a commercial for, you know, $20 or something.
Oh, right, because then you're going to have to do it for the polls.
Well, no, but not just you.
Right, everybody else.
Everybody else.
Right.
So even that's why you'll see, like, the score, never such, whatever. They would say they didn't sell commercials for our show, which is total BS, because we were selling. They were easy to sell. But charge $2.50 for a 30-second or for Mike North, which was way too high. But they'd say, okay, we'll give you one on Stacks and Jacks as well. So they would say, as a matter of fact, the guy who was the general manager says to me, we can't even sell. We're giving your commercials away for free. And I knew the drill. And I really, really don't like being insulted by people intelligence wise. And I said, okay, God, if you're having that much trouble, I'll help you out. We'll take them for PTI.
Right.
And he goes, well, they're not free. I said, I know they're not. They're not free. Okay. But, hey, get back real quick to the CPI. I think you are absolutely correct in the sense that there was a change during the Carter administration. But
yeah,
that doesn't begin to be an excuse for the last 15 years. The last 15 years has to do with, and sorry, but it's the 6.5% piece of the basket for medical stuff.
Right.
In the last, even if I agree with you, by the way, there's no way I can't agree with you. You're 100% right, and it's owner's equivalent rent. But if you look at just the rent number, and when you talk about the TV today, it's not news, Carl. It's not what we do. It's ratings. And if you're doing a financial statement and people own stock, they want to have, you know, Joe, 8 weeks ago, they want to interview Joe Biden. They want Kamala Harris on there. You're not going to, and you want today, if you don't get the chairman of Merck or the chairman of Pfizer because their earnings are out, if you don't get that guy first, you're never going to ask him, why do you charge so damn much? you're not going to do that because the guy will never come back on again. So you're right. They become touts, and without really even, they think they're news people, but they're not. And so,
right, but the thing is that now you actually have this has crossed into the realm, and there are people looking into it now. Okay, and this is when you start talking about this in political context, this is black letter illegal. All right.
Well, once you start influencing elections outside your district, what's illegal or legal? It's like all's fair in love and war.
That's not, believe it or not, there's nothing wrong with a PAC, you know, like this stuff that's going on here where you've got these guys in D.C. that are trying to queer a state election, okay, which has nothing to do with the federal system at all. But, you know, but that's not against the law, provided they don't coordinate, right? Yeah, okay. Oh, sure.
Well, yeah, right.
Sure, these guys have never talked to each other. Uh-huh, and if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you in New York. But the thing that is black letter against the law is for me to pay people as a spokesperson without disclosing it. Now I can run all the political ads I want as long as I disclose who's doing it. All right, so like all this paper that I've got upstairs, it's all got where it's coming from on the return address, right? So it's not very hard to run down who's doing it, what the deal is. What these guys are doing is paying people to pretend to be organic supporters of Kamala's campaign.
Is this the same as paying Tom Brady to tout Bitcoin?
Yeah, except that in the political context, it's black letter illegal to do it, whereas in the financial context, it's a little bit more of a gray area, isn't it?
Well, no. In my business, which is, you know, managing money, securities, we do both. We do manage money for a fee, and we also manage if I do anything, it's wrong. If you're big enough, you can do whatever the hell you damn well please.
Well, I mean, you're not, but Chief, you're not part of Goldman.
Oh, it's exactly right. I understand it, but
yeah, I mean that's the problem. You just have to understand. You're just this little guy over here. You have to actually follow the rules.
But you know, I think the issue it all ties together, and I always have trouble. I think that there's a theme for the show, Carol. It's everything depends on everything else, but which is these guys. When I say these guys, the CNBC, the Foxes, they have no problem talking to you, and literally, they will say, CPI says that in the last year, rent is up 10%. And then the next person will say, who's the guy that does all the rent surveys? What the hell's the name of that company? You know what I'm talking about. They always do the rent and house and housing surveys.
Oh, the NAR people?
There's a couple of names. They'll come out and they'll say, these guys came out and said, last year, rents are up 22% around the country. They'll give the report like 30 seconds after the first one and never say, right. Wait a minute. how can this firm, if that's their business.
How'd that happen?
If the rent says 22% and our idiots at the CPI, it's a point. I think that they're just taking a couple of things and those two things they're dropping on. They're dropping on the housing and they're dropping on the medical. And for a lot of people, that's 80% of their basket, for God's sake. Right? I mean, if you're.
Yeah, and you know, but I mean, I look at. I don't expect anything out of the Fed, okay? I mean, I know everybody's looking for that, you know, quarter point. Got to have a quarter point. First off, if they actually do it, you're not going to, you know, it's not going to do anything.
Dan Janita said that the last few times we've had a streak like this and they actually went the other way, the market dropped like 20%.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's because typically what's the reality of rate cuts is that the economy stinks, right? And they're trying to, you know, stave off an incipient or in process recession. But could you argue based on the IRX right now, which is sitting at 5.147, could you argue that a 25 basis point cut would put the band, you know, would put the centroid of the band between 5 and 5.25? Yeah, you can. Instead of 5.25, 5.5, right? I mean, could you argue that? Yes, you could argue that.
But the you're supposed to assume, you and I, that my credit card rate's going down. Don't assume
but
that.
But it's not going.
Not
to.
Going to.
But here's the thing. If you were to get tomorrow a quarter point cut, the market would have actually been the one that made the cut, not the Fed. Because the IRX is at 5.147 right now.
There is a school of thought going back 40 years. That the Fed is absolutely a follower and not a leader. And I'm part of that school.
I've been talking about this for an awfully long time.
They clearly are a follower on long-term rates.
Well, but this is not... But remember, the Fed doesn't control long-term rates directly. Okay, they influence them, but they don't control them. The overnight rate is what the Fed funds rate is. All right? So, I mean, if I look at the 13-week bill, which is what the IRX is, the 13-week bill is trading at 5.147 this morning. So, okay, the centroid of a 5 to 5.25 would be there, right?
Correct.
Well, that means that if the Fed does cut 25 basis points at the end of their meeting, they did not actually cut rates. The market cut rates by 25 basis points, and the Fed confirmed, said, oh, yeah, we'll go along with that. They didn't actually do anything.
Well, they may actually... Even though the money supply went up again last month, I don't know if you saw that. You probably did.
Yeah, I did.
But they actually the part of the pool is being done by individual people. If borrowing drops because business drops, your money supply is going down by itself. So,
well, that's right.
So I mean, it's hard to explain this on a show, but I've done it a few times, and I think people are starting to get the hang of what I'm talking about. But they're trying to assess how much is in the pool. But the thing it's different. Carol, is it, well, in my opinion, is it 20, 30 years ago, the Fed was a follower, but they were not near as aggressive at proving their point. Is that the right thing to say? In other words, when interest rates, the 30-year was down to what, 1.5 or something? I mean, there's no way on earth you don't short those bonds.
Well,
I mean, come on. I mean, there's only one direction to go here. Well, I guess in Europe they did go negative, but still, I mean, God knows what those things are trading. But if you would have just done that on several occasions, the Fed now is willing to buy a $1 trillion worth of these things just to prove a point and jam them up your behind. I mean, right. they are so in the, they were nowhere near in the market to that extent in the 80s and 70s and 90s. But now,
Chief, I'm not arguing that there isn't, you know, there isn't that kind of game playing going on.
But it's overwhelming. The money. I mean, the thought of them buying $1 trillion worth of bonds in 1982 just to prove to you that they were a bad sell when the inflation was going up, they would never have thought of that. But now they'll do
not
it.
Only that, you would have been looked at like you had six heads if you suggested it.
Now they only did it, but they got every other central bank in the world to go with them.
Yeah, the biggest issue right now is that when you look at where, you know, what percentage, there was this report out a couple of days ago, the percentage of personal income tax receipts last month in the monthly Treasury statement that was expended on just interest payments. Okay, and the MTS is, I mean, it's a check registered.
It's equal to the defense now.
Well, but I'm saying, you're going to argue with the check register? That's stupid, right? It's larger than defense. It's larger than on a single basis, Medicare. Not Medicare and Medicaid, but Medicare. But we're talking about literally, it's larger on a month-over-month basis on than defense.
Well, Carter, we got a dash. We'll have to pick this up on Friday. Hey, I also want to talk to you about the Bitcoin guy on Friday. And he was right. Boy, 24 years, 7.1% a year growth in the money supply. When it would with a growth in the economy of maybe 2, he goes, Bitcoin's looking better by the day. And I'm not a fan of Bitcoin, but you know what? From what a lot of what the guy said, it's not all that wrong. In terms of the dollar going down, anyway. I don't know about the Bitcoin going up, but
yeah, I was going to say the problem with that is that solving math problems and expending huge amounts of electrical energy.
I get it. I mean,
right?
S&P futures up 10. Nasdaq futures up 51. Be right back, Joel and Connor.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years I've seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricardo on the board. SP futures up 975. NASDAQ futures up 45.50. 45.50. Dow futures up 24. We've got Merck down 228, even though they said their high-priced drugs are doing pretty well. They beat on everything, but they're down 228. We've got, what else we got moving in the Dow? Really not that much. I mean, we've got the Fed thing tomorrow, which probably means it's a dull, sleepy day for money managers like me, but we will see. Sometimes you get surprised on that kind of stuff. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 57, had a huge move up yesterday. So they're 38,525, but today's only 0.1%. Hang Seng down 235 after being up a bunch yesterday. So they're back down to 17,002, managed to hang above 17,000. Shanghai down 12, it's 0.4%, 28.79. So the mainland China stocks are not doing very well. So the Bank of Japan is starting its two-day policy meeting, as is our Fed. They're coordinating all stuff. Tuna fish sandwiches around, I guess. Over in Europe, the DAX up 74.4%, FTSE down 15.2%. Kick around up 28.4, so mainly up there, but Diageo is way down. The makers of what's the booze they make? They have what are they? What's their stuff, Ricardo? Diageo is I'll get it here.
Can you spell it for me?
Diageo. They're a big booze manufacturer. One of their things was way down, and something else was way up. We'll get it in a second here. Yesterday, Dow was down 49, S&P up 4, NASDAQ up 12, so it was a snoozer. The bonds unchanged, 4.17, but that's low, 10 years. The bond unchanged, 2.36. It's gone, these rates have gone pretty much straight down lately. Japan under a point, 0.998, which we haven't seen in a while. So we'll see what their policy meeting does today. Oil up down 51 cents, 75.30, which is way below the 83 bucks it was like a couple of weeks ago. Brent down 57 cents, 79.21. Makes you wonder why gas is going up here in Chicago. Natural gas unchanged, 203. RBOB down 2 cents, 239. Gold, 1050, 2388. It's up in the morning and then can't hang there during the day, but we'll see today. Silver up 15 cents, 28.01, long way from 30 where it was a couple of weeks ago. Copper down 3 cents, 405. The dollar is it's 108.2 against the euro, which is kind of unchanged. British pound, same thing, 128.5. We have the Japanese yen going down a little bit, but still, it's 155. It was 161, so it's strengthened a lot in the last couple of weeks. And we have Bitcoin, which had this huge rally. It's down 756 today, 66,627. You think Trump is going to start buying some or something? I don't know, some crazy stuff. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 70 degrees right now with a high of 87, warm and humid with times of clouds and sun. Wildfire smoke will cause the sky to be hazy. Tonight will be partly cloudy and humid. A heavy thunderstorm late with a low of 72 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 90 degrees right now with a high of 108. Very warm with sunshine and patchy clouds. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 88 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 16 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 37 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 31 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 16 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 34 minutes. Lastly, sports, the MLB yesterday. Cubs lose to the Reds 7-1. White Sox lose to Royals 8-5. And Diamondbacks beat the Nationals 9-8. Olympic medal tracker. Yes, U.S. is currently with 20 gold medals. France has 16. And Japan and China are fighting third place with 12 medals each. That's all I got for you. Back over to you, Chief.
Do we have Mr. Joel?
Hey, good morning, Chief. How you doing?
Doing good. How are you? What's
I'm
a good word?
I'm doing super.
Good.
What's doing super? I couldn't be better.
Well, that's a long ago term. How you doing? Super. I haven't heard that in like 30 years.
Well, I'm an old guy. I'm an old guy.
You know, these things recycle. You know, now you could be it could be new. Now it's a new term.
Are we going sports?
Wherever you want to go. What? Just one market comment. Why and for how long? I don't know how much you watch these dividend plays. We do dividend plays. Look at dividend pricing. Earnings pricing. And why now? And normally the market is you're almost a head scratcher at how good the market is by predicting the move on an earnings. This has been a big earnings couple of weeks and it's still going. We've had so many, I would say, Joel, in my many years here, generally, if you sold all the straddles, even though you get somewhere to hit you where the sun don't shine, by and large, since retail people can't really short the stuff, you might get a slight advantage by being a seller of all of them. Boy, in the last two or three years, I think that's totally turned around. Some of this stuff, I mean, the 3M earnings was a three-time straddle move, four times. It moved $24. The straddle was $6. I mean, I've seen that week after week, earnings after earnings in the last couple of years. What do you suppose is causing that?
Computers.
Just everybody gets out of the way? Whichever way it moves, everybody just gets out of the way?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that, there's options formulas that, you know, nailed everything down from the delta to the gamma to the theta, whatever term you want to use. And then you get a stock. I mean, I have been looking at this 3M on my screen for months. And it just, based on the historical data, nothing. It doesn't move. It's a dog. It has this, glue thing hanging over it.
Yeah, they got the huge lawsuit hanging over them.
Right. And so you can't be owning it. You can't own it. Now, I don't know what the news was. I was out on Friday, so I'm not sure what. It was earnings, I believe, that caused it.
Yeah, but they might have said something about the lawsuit, too, which I didn't catch.
They might have said something about the lawsuit. And you're right. I mean, it's happening. It seems to be happening more. You got to realize, too, that when these earnings come out after hours, there ain't no options open.
No.
There ain't nobody to keep things in check. And then also when stocks open, Like if you have a call, you know, a position in your strata or a call on the put, the big stock that has earnings, and you're like, oh man, I want to sell. You know, I need to exit. You know, they won't open that thing for 2, 3, 4 minutes until things settle down. So I think it's the algos, and I think it's the lack of option liquidity. And I agree with you. I mean, it is a strategy that works a lot. And that's kind of just overall with options, right, yeah. Chief?
Well, I mean,
it works a lot, and then it doesn't.
Well, that's the beauty of it, honestly, right? I mean, the idea is being able to do the same thing all the time. It shouldn't work that way. I mean, everybody gets to win one once in a while, right?
Yep. I mean, it's tough. I mean, and we talk about this in our show, too. You know, if you want to own a stock, you want to own something long-term, you know, options are a timing measure, right? But if you own the stock, you know, if you take XYZ is going to 200 and it's at $80, you know, you can be as cute as you want with the options, and you can be as cute as you want with straddles or, you know, call spreads and stuff. You know, just you own the stock. If it goes up, it goes up. If you don't, but timing is tough.
Well, yeah. So what about the sports world? What do you think about the Olympics? The travel to Paris is down, like, dramatically. Nobody's going there.
Is it people... I just say people just don't want to be around a lot of crowds.
Yeah, and I think that's partly
just,
it.
Yep, and just the... you know, blaming on the overall political app, you know, what's just going on in politics and geopolitics all over the world, what stances is going on, what elections are taking place. What elections are taking place, but then they don't like the result, and then they overturn the result, or they try to overturn the result. I don't know. That sounds kind of familiar. So I think overall you're seeing some slowdown in, you know, in travel. These airlines have taken a hit. This points to the R word, right? Things going down, recession, economy. I mean, we can keep saying it, Chief. We can keep saying we're going into a recession, and eventually we will. And for some people, for some Americans, the higher inflation, the thing that's caused, you know, they are in a personal recession. So you can't paint things with a broad stroke and have everything apply. But I think it's the geopolitical concerns, and I just think people are like, hey, you know, maybe I won't take that trip.
Well, if you're not going to the Olympics, I mean, I'm not a world traveler, but I'd like to see some places someday. But I probably wouldn't pick this week to go to Paris if I'm not going to the Olympics.
It's the last week. It's the absolute last week. Yeah. Actually, though, I have a niece. It's a bond trader for Barclays over there, and she said it's not as bad as what you read in the newspapers. Doesn't that sound familiar? She, you know, she lives right in the heart of the area. She's gone to, you know, a couple different events. Of course, she lives there, so, you know, knows her way around and maneuvers. I mean, the other thing, you know, people looking for excuses not to go. Maybe you're planning on going late. You know, oh, let's see how the Olympics go. And then, boom, there's a hack on a train. Boom, they knock out the internet, you know, for parts of the country. You know, so I think that are two concerns, and or one main concern that's come across twice. So I'm just keeping my fingers crossed, I'm watching some of the individual performances, I'm watching some of these, you know, of course I'm cheering for my swimmers and things like that, but I just like to see things just kind of come out.
Well, I watched our two guys do the spectacular thing, well, probably during the day yesterday, but I saw it last night. Our two guys do this spectacular stuff on that pommel horse. I can't believe people could do that. I can't believe people could do that. I mean, that is so amazing. I saw one of those things when I was young and in good shape. I saw one of those things in the gym. I tried to just almost like boost myself up on it. And I'm like, how the hell? What are these guys? When I was young, I couldn't even come close to doing something like that. The big hand, of course, I have a totally different. I mean, I'm tall and all that stuff. Those guys are all shoulders and arms, but still, it's a. It is really something, what those guys can do.
Oh, man. I'm watching. I think I'm more nervous. I mean, with my girls, was watching a little bit of the floor exercise and the gymnastics. And I just can't. I am more afraid of than they are of doing this. And they're, jumping up and doing triple salt, you know, three flips in the air and twisting and then coming down and, oh. Just landing on my feet.
Well, do you believe how that, what's her name, with a bad leg?
Yeah.
She must have been 5 feet in the air.
Can you believe that? I have so much respect for those athletes. It's so much hard work. Unfortunately, the Aussies are coming up a little bit on us in swimming. They've been gunning for us for a while.
They've always had great swimmers and stuff,
though. They always had. Yep. Ian,
I have a question for you. We should have a Stacks and Jacks pool. We should have a Stacks and Jacks pool. When you get the ladies, this can be said for any sport, the ladies on the uneven parallel bars, when they fly off the top one and, like, turn in the air and grab the other one, I'm going to say, how many times do they try that and fall before they finally catch it? I'm going to say over 100.
I'd hate to get... Well, don't they do a lot of belt training with that?
Well, they have the thing where you're suspended kind of from the ceiling and so forth, but still, the first time you actually try it full speed, I'm going to guess you don't catch it. Just going to say.
Entire body would be broken if I did that once. So. Chief.
I had a buddy of mine in high school, and he was a track and field guy. He said, nothing prepares you for the first time you actually try a pole vault. How about it rips all your rib cage apart the first time you do it? No amount of training on land. I mean, maybe they didn't have the belt training in those days, but... So the first time you actually try it is just what a shock to your whole body. It's scary. I can't even imagine. Anyway, thank you, bud.
All right, go blue.
Do we have Kenny? We're going to write to Kenny, Ricardo?
We do not have Kenny in the meeting, but we still have Carlo.
All right. Hey, Carl, can you, in case Kenny is in transit, he's going from Cape Cod back to Florida. Maybe he's going this morning. Is Carl still around?
Yeah.
What's up? Well, we can continue. Hey, the conversation and I with this the Bitcoin guy. It's not had nothing really to do with him except his conclusion is that for whatever reason, if you're comparing the two, I'll use the term currencies, although I don't believe Bitcoin is, he's saying one has been growing at an incredible rate for 25 years to the point where they're degrading it on their own, and the other one has a limit to how fast it can grow. And to that point, I guess he's probably right. I mean, but what he was describing about Bitcoin was not, he thought it was a commercial for Bitcoin. I thought it was sort of a relative thing where the dollar is degrading so fast you need something else and this is the only one around. That's kind of what I got out of it.
The design of Bitcoin is such that it has a deflationary bias built into it in that you can quite trivially destroy it with no means of replacement. Okay, so if I, let's in the fiat money world, all right, if I'm a bank and the bank burns to the ground and in my vault was $10 million worth of 20s and 100s, and we know that there was $10 million. And by the way, we know what the serial numbers were, too, because they were issued and they were consecutive and they had the nice little bound paper wrappings on them and all that stuff. Okay. So we know they're gone. The Treasury can reissue those dollars without any inflationary impact because they really were destroyed. Okay?
What we think.
Well, let's assume for the sake of argument that there's no game playing going on, that there really was a fire and they really did burn up, okay? All right, so the problem with Bitcoin is that if I've got, Bitcoin and it's on a USB stick or, one of these hardware wallets or whatever have you, and I physically lose the key, I lose the access key to it, even if I have the actual signed transactions, if I lose the access key, they're irretrievably gone. However, there's no way for me to prove that, ever, because you can't prove I lost the access key. Right?
Right.
I mean, I can claim I lost it, but did I really lose it? Well, I don't know. I mean, there's no physical way to prove that they were destroyed. And there is no way to reissue those destroyed ones. Well, there is a substantial percentage of the total Bitcoin stash, if you will, that has has not shown up in any transaction log, you know, for an extremely long period of time, you know, 10, 15 years.
My view on that, the chances of the, you know, this whole idea that, you know, the guy from the Kung Fu movie came down from the mountaintop with the strangly goatee, did all this for the benefit of mankind, went back to his Shaolin
temple. That's a total load of crap.
It's total load of crap. I mean, I don't buy that. So, I mean, because everything, that's actually what I wanted to get to here, because you're the only one maybe who can stab an answer. When we're talking about Trump popping out the other day, and I mean, I listened to part of it. Basically, that he wants the government to, the Bitcoin stuff that they have managed to grab from people, he wants to keep like a strategic oil reserve, and actually maybe have a Bitcoin. How is it then, if all this stuff is supposed to be so sacred, how now do you have exchanges where people have it in essentially street name, or for lack of a better term?
Well, so it's essentially, yeah, you're, that's
but once you start giving your keys, and how does the government get somebody's key? And if you know, my brother bought $20 worth of Bitcoin, God knows how many years ago, and of course he lost the key. Of course, it also wasn't $20. It was, the service fee was like $7, so he got $13,
right,
out of a vending machine. Now, I refuse to believe, you can't convince me that 15 years from now somebody is not going to have his Bitcoin somewhere. Because, I mean,
in theory, okay, and this is the curse that goes with the blessing, if you will, right? If the access has truly been lost, then it's essentially a suspension. You know, it's suspended and never comes back, right? Ever. It's out of circulation.
Somebody knows Bitcoins that haven't been touched for, put a decade on it or something, or 15 years. Somebody's going to get that. It's my Chicago background.
I'll tell you what, the first time that gets proved to have happened. Okay.
That's kind of where I'm going here. You always can read my mind, is if it turns out there is a fatal flaw in the system, we got a real problem.
The first time it's proved that happens, the value is zero immediately.
That's what I'm thinking. If there's a scam anywhere, it's a problem.
Well, if there is a way to do that, then, oh boy.
But the government seems to be able to maneuver around in here. How are they doing it?
Well, they're all right. So one of the things about this is, you know, people talk about, well, the original use cases were, well, I want to use this to buy drugs because there's no trace. And I'm like, you're an idiot. Not only is there a trace, it is an absolutely mathematically provable trace. And
if somebody really wants to trace it.
Well, I'm saying that's admissible evidence. And oh, by the way, not only is it evidence, it is mathematically proved that it was you, and you're going to go to jail.
If the trap door, where it comes out of the Bitcoin into somebody's cash, is in Bulgaria, who the hell is going to find the guy?
Well, that's basically the scheme, right? Is if I can manage to find somewhere that will tell whoever comes knocking to go to hell, right?
Yeah.
Now, the problem with that paradigm is that then the people that come knocking, because they tend to be folks that have, you know, black Suburbans and lots of guns, those guys may say, well, okay, you don't have to divulge it, or maybe you intentionally destroyed the records because that's what you wanted to do. That's fine. You're responsible. You're going to go to jail, or we're just going to shoot you and be done with it. And there is a problem, because there is a trace. It ends somewhere. Now, if that person refuses to go further for whatever reason, you better be sure that, you know, if you're that person, that you can enforce that and not end up in, you know, in the middle of the River Seine. That would be a problem.
Well, I mean, somehow or other, it seems, just anecdotally, and I'm no expert. I'm just trying to be a little observant here and listen to guys like you. But if Clyde Barrow stole all his money and put it into Bitcoin, and now he's got his password or whatever, and all of a sudden they shoot the hell out of him like they did, you would think that the government could never retrieve it because, oh, by the way, they shot his little thingy too. And part of the bullets hit one of those things. They seem to be able to get it, Carl. How are they getting it?
Well, they get it by getting their hands. So that you can, you can't void a transaction, but what you can do is take the last one and essentially revert it. Okay.
But how do you even know how do you even know he did it if you don't have the
Well, you don't. You well, that the entire point of blockchain is that it's all published, that every transfer is documented and impossible to erase.
I notice this Carl Denninger guy broke into some bank and stole $10 million.
Right.
And now all of a sudden he doesn't seem to have the $10 million. Now, how would I even have a clue as to where you went, what you did, how that became Bitcoin? How would I even find the place and find your number?
Well, the same way you find anything else, right? I mean, if I stole $10 million and they were physical banknotes, presumably I stole some that were serialized, and you know what those serial numbers are, and if you're surveilling things, you can figure out where they, you know, how they ended up back in circulation, wherever they went. But the problem with anything that gets into a blockchain type of situation is that your particular wallet, your ID, if you will, is just a series of numbers. All right. So by itself, it's not tied to you, and therefore by itself, it's secure. The problem is your actions are not secure, and if you at any point in the future. Let's say that I, just for the sake of argument, I haven't actually done this. Let's say that I perform a transaction in Bitcoin for $10 million worth of cocaine. Okay, well, that's a fairly decent amount of coke, right?
Now where do you even, this is going to be my next question. That was going to be much simpler. I'm trying to buy a transmission for my truck. Everybody's $1,500. Some guy goes, I'll do it for $1,000, but I need it in Bitcoin. So I got my 10 Benjamins. Where do we even go with the 10 Benjamins to get it to this guy? How do I even start? I've never done this. How do I even?
Well, you find somebody who already has it. Now, in some places, you can actually go to a vending machine and exchange it there.
And then direct it to him.
Right. But the thing is, you know, once you have it in Bitcoin, it's in a wallet of some kind, okay, which is it's just an identifier. It's an opaque identifier. It's a long string of numbers. And it has a password associated, which is also, there's two parts of the key. There's the public part, which is the published piece. That's the identifier that everybody uses. And then there's the private piece, the private key. And only you have that. Now, if you lose that, you're boned because everything that's
this is a system, a series of numbers or letters, or what is it?
It's technically a series of numbers because, you know, this is all computer code. This is the same technology.
But you could use your birthday. It could be your code.
Well, you better not use like that. But yeah. But the thing is that's not actually your code. That's used to derive the code. But it had better be very hard to guess, because if it's not, you've got big problems, right? Because somebody could steal it. But this is, at its core, it's the same technology that's used to secure transactions on the internet. All right, so when you go to my blog, there is a published certificate that anybody can look at. And that certificate is half of the key that allows you to have a secure connection to my site, to my website. The other half is a private key. That piece, nobody can ever have except me. And as long as I'm the only one that has it...
So I mean, that just allows you to write the thing.
Well, as long as I'm the only one that has it, when you're communicating with me, you can be absolutely certain that you are talking to me. Okay, it's the same thing. It's why you can go on to IB or Schwab or Fidelity or your bank or whatever and perform a transaction there, and you are sure that you're actually on your bank's website.
All right, so for the total ignorant dude that I am regarding this stuff, I agree, probably foolishly, to buy this transmission from this bloke.
Right.
And I got $1,000 in my hand. what's my first move? I can't go to the bank. Where do I go?
You go to either an exchange, just like you would if you wanted to buy a stock.
Where would that be? Is it a storefront or somewhere?
There's a bunch of them that are online, but I mean,
in my hand.
Yeah, but there are literally ATM-type devices that will exchange that into Bitcoin.
Okay, so that's where I got to find one of those.
Right, so you do that. Now, how you do it, whether you do it at one of those ATM-type devices or you do it through an online brokerage or whatever, but the bottom line is now you have this, okay? But the only identifier that is out there is this opaque number, and nobody knows who that belongs to, all right, except that it exists and that it's valid is trivially verifiable. But whose it is not. So now you buy the transmission. Okay? Now this is it's a perfectly legal transaction, right?
Right.
You bought a transmission. Okay, fine. But let's say that sometime later you use that same wallet and you buy a pound of cocaine. All right. Now that's not a legal transaction.
No.
Right. If I can somehow link you to the transmission transaction, which was a legal transaction, you're going to jail for buying the coke.
Okay. Well, how does anybody get to fish around? That's my point. It seems like people get to fish around in their governments, and which makes it a little less of a selling point than these people are selling.
Well, it's not just fishing around. Anybody can look up the transaction log. That's
really
the entire point of it, is that they're all verifiable. And this is the risk, is that if you're doing something you shouldn't be doing with it, okay, and you screw up in any transaction ever, past, present, or future, under your wallet ID gets personally linked to you, then every transaction you have ever performed becomes exposed and provable in a court.
Really?
Yep. And this is inherently how the system has to work. If it doesn't, then there's no integrity to it, and I can steal all of it, and it's worth zero.
Wow. All right, to be continued, because you got me up to first grade here. So real quick, because we got to go to Hal, how does the guy on the other end get his 10 Benjamins?
Well, he goes somewhere that will trade him the Bitcoin for the Benjamins.
Now, but I mean, what are the fees on all this?
Well, that's the other problem. With Bitcoin in particular, they're very high because you have to put the data out there and then other people have to verify that the transaction actually occurred. And that verification costs money because it has to go through the... Now, traditionally what has been done is that the people who are doing the mining are the ones doing the verifying because they're already running the application necessary to do that and performing the computations. But that's not free, and as a result there is a substantial cost. You know, I mean, you talked about, you know, a guy supposedly had $20 worth of Bitcoin, he really had 13.
Yeah.
right. Well, guess what, that is a very real problem, and for small transactions that those fees are extremely high compared to, this is one of the reasons that I said there's the use cases are somewhat limited, because if you look at a traditional credit card, the transaction charge on that at the merchant processor is in many cases 1% or less. So that's one of the challenges, is that it's because it is a complicated mathematical derivation and it has to be confirmed by a large number of people in order to be considered valid, there's a significant overhead associated with the transaction.
I think I'll just keep my Benjamin stuff.
Well, it's a lot harder.
It's degrading by the week, I know. All right, we'll talk to you about it on Friday, but
yep.
SP futures up 10, Nasdaq futures up 60. We want to go right to Hal? Hal, you with us?
Yep, I'm here.
How are you, bud? Do you understand all this Bitcoin stuff? I don't get any of it.
Well, I don't spend a lot of time. I don't spend very much time at all reading about it. I mean, I know about it. I know it's an algorithm that requires lots of power to solve the algorithm to mine Bitcoin. And I know there's a fixed amount. I also believe that if it was... if government allowed it to be used for paying your tax bills, I think it'd be a lot more stable, because right now I think it fluctuates more like like gold or some other.
It's like an artificial asset. Stack. It's like tulips without the tulip.
Yeah, but I think if it was legal tender in the form of government fees and taxes, I think the volatility would have settled down. Because I think it's a much better, I think compared to the dollar, which is really not backed by anything except the government's ability to inflate, I think Bitcoin would probably be a better.
Well, but I mean,
I think it'd be a better money.
Well, my question on that is I mean, I want to get into it, because I actually just did some calculations. I was kind of saving this for you in the last 24 years and what we've done to the dollar. But my concern on that is, I mean, I don't think you know anybody who's more concerned about what we've done to the dollar than me and the people and the other people on this show. Yet, to the extent that there's way less gold per dollar, way less bridges per dollar, way less aircraft carriers per dollar, it's
way,
still
way less Armani suits per dollar, right?
But it's also it's still not nothing. So to replace it, I would say tomorrow if
I think we can say it's probably the least add.
Well, I'm saying is if all of a sudden, I'm not going to say the Arabs could pull us off, but if somebody were to say, "Hey, look, we're going to have a we're going to call it a HAL." And it's and one of them, we won't call it a dollar, we'll call it a HAL. One HAL is worth a cup of oil. And by the way, here's the oil. So you can bring your dollars in or your HALs in and get a gallon of oil if you got enough of them. If it was actually worth something, whatever it is, and it didn't, they didn't just keep printing it like they're doing to the dollar, could I think that particular currency could take over the dollar? The answer is yes. But my concern with the Bitcoin is, we're worried about a currency that's worth kind of less and less by the day. We're going to replace it with something that's worth nothing. I mean, that logic to me doesn't fly too far.
But I think there's a confusion in the word worth, right? I think when you're talking about fiat currencies that have been driven to be worth less and less every year, I'm not saying worthless. If it was worthless, then, you know, it would take you a zillion dollars to buy a copy of Starbucks, right? But the government, through its central banks, are driving the value of these things down, but they're doing it together, right?
So the coordination, I am stunned with, aren't you? How good their coordination is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, maybe they're all trained at the same school of economic thinking, right?
Well they used to be able to talk. Maybe it's because the world's really run by people that aren't involved in any of this stuff.
I don't think you need to have that. I think what you have to have is like this idea of an orthodoxy. And if they're all being trained in the same church of economics, then they're going to use the same economics, right? So I don't think it necessarily has to be collusion. It's just they have the same training. Anybody outside that orthodoxy is crazy, right?
Well, here I'm looking.
So I think that's how it happens.
Well, let me drag back a little bit when you're talking about our dollar to gold ratio in 1913 was 26.88 per ounce, and now it's
that's new dollars versus new
1913
like pound of new ounce of gold harvested or
no wherever the government had in hack or in now it's 29.79 per ounce, which is quite a difference, right? But it's not zero. We're Bitcoin zero. That's my point. I mean, are we going the wrong way? Yeah, but are we way too fast of an extent? But it's also not, it's not zero. I don't think.
I think the problem with the dollar is, it's been so devalued by the Federal Reserve, and just imagine this experiment: if the Federal Reserve was the only one doing this, and all the other central banks were doing kind of a monetarist treatment of the money, where they grow a very growth rate of their money instead of unemployment, inflation, like all central banks do. If the Federal Reserve was the only one doing it, we'd be in really bad trouble.
Well,
right?
The dollar would be going down.
So we don't really
notice it. Well, the yen has been having that same sort of issue lately. They're kind of doing something independent, and look what it's doing to them.
Yeah.
But
I think in terms of government fiat, in terms of central bank money, the dollar is in good shape, but in the absence of that other world where only the Fed inflates and the other central banks don't, it would be a much different world. We'd be probably in a German hyperinflation.
Well, that's what happened during the 60s to pay for the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
We started to do that, right?
Yep.
And what happened?
Arthur Burns was supposed to be the Milton Friedman in the room, and he wasn't.
Well, remember when Charles de Gaulle would come over with the dollars and he wanted to go back with hunks of gold and pissed everybody off? Well, I mean...
I don't remember that. I was, you know...
Well, he was
probably just in diapers still.
We were officially $35 an ounce.
Yeah.
And he brought over a bunch of dollars. He goes, okay, here's 350 bucks. Give me my 10 ounces.
Well, Nixon had to end that with an executive order, right?
Yeah.
FDR teamed up, right?
Yeah. But I guess I have several. By the way, unless you were listening yesterday, because of this Bitcoin guy talking about how much the dollar has been degraded over a certain number of years, I think he used the term 20. But I went back to 2000. Okay, what do you suppose the growth rate? Now it hasn't been even. But if it was even, if you put in a future value calculator, which I don't think people even know what the hell it is anymore, what do you suppose the average increase in the money supply, M2, has been from 2000 to today?
Annually?
Yep.
I don't know, maybe 8%, 9%?
It's pretty close. It's like 7.2 or 3.
Yeah.
Which, and like this guy said, the Bitcoin guy goes, what's our growth really been? 2.5?
Yeah.
You're talking 5? 5.5% inflation every year, whether you count it or you don't. And it's exactly what has happened. And there's massive winners and losers in that game. And, I don't know if you listened to the show yesterday, I was fortunate enough, Saturday night, went out, went to the south side, did the Audrey and one of her pals, we went out for pizza, nice place, and, our usual place. And we dropped back at this one lady's house. She loves doing her backyard. God, she got every flower in the world back there. It's absolutely spectacular. Her water bill's like $1,000 a month, just watering her flowers in the summertime. But she loves it, and it's gorgeous. And
That's like paying $1,000 a month to go work out, right?
Yeah.
At a gym.
Yeah. Well, but she's out there working on those all the time, so at least she gets her workout out of it.
And she gets out there in the sunlight.
Oh, yeah.
Get some vitamin D made in her.
Well, her problem with that is she's very Irish, so she's got to be careful with the sun.
Oh.
But anyway, this young couple from next door comes over, and they're, I don't normally get a chance to. They're in their 30s. They got one little boy who was funnier than hell, a good little guy. And they got one on the way, and talking about how they bought this house in Springfield. I think it was Springfield, so it doesn't matter. For like $190,000 or something, and 2-3 years later, they sell it for like $240,000. And how, this guy probably did some work. He's real handy, and he's not lazy at all. This is your the American family, right? Right in front of you.
Yeah.
And so the dude, he's Hal 20 years ago. What can I tell you? Or 10 years, 15. So now they take the profit from that place, which they never dreamed they're going to make like $50,000 on the joint. And so now they put it into the other place. Now this place they probably paid, three something for. But they now have the original down payment plus the other 50 that they made. So they're probably putting 100 down on the place, which means it's affordable. And it's like they don't even, nor should they really, don't realize how bizarre and how screwed up that is.
Yeah.
That if somebody, some other guy's renting, and he was paying $1,000, he's now paying $2,000. And how it is, so it almost seems like somebody somewhere on top of a mountaintop is powerful enough, and I'm not saying any president or anybody is, to tell all these people, this is what you're all going to do for the next decade. Oh, by the way, I bought all this crap, I bought all this stock, I bought all these buildings, and in 10 years, I'm going to have so much money compared to other people. It is, you would think we would realize this by now, or maybe we are, maybe we don't, but somebody has got us by the short hairs and is doing really well with this. And you get couples like this that they don't even, why should they? They did all the right things. Why should they take the paddle to their own head or something? Why would they? They did all the right things. They worked hard. And by the way, it's working out for them. And I mean, you know what? They couldn't happen to a nicer couple. But still, yeah. It's like, this is kind of wrong, isn't it? I mean.
Well, I went on the Drudge Report and I took a screenshot of like four of his headlines that I thought were really interesting. Individually, they say one thing, but together, they say one thing. Starter home prices top $1 million in more than 200 cities.
Yeah.
Cost of living crisis hits sales of food, cars, luxury goods. Kids, growing number of Americans say no thanks. And then the final headline was, economy grows at 2.8%, blowing past expectations. And then I found another article at MSN, world's richest 1% gained $40 trillion in a decade.
Yeah.
Right. All together, what does that say? Well, what they're doing is not working well for probably 80% of Americans.
But it is working
80%
well.
80% of Americans are in recession.
But it is working well for a small group. How the hell is a small group making this happen? Because they are. It's not. Well, I don't believe at my age now. I don't believe anything at this at my age is done. I mean, my brother and I have all these arguments all the time because that's what brothers do, right? But I have these. It's not just with him. It's really with just about everybody, because I can't really, other than being a grumpy, I try not to be a conspiratorial person, but other than being a grumpy old dude, which I hope I'm not really,
when you see this happen
10 times, Carl, the first time, I'm going to say in 1975 or 78 when I was doing stuff at Pullman, I'm going to say the Federal Reserve with the Vietnam War and all that stuff, I'm going to say they did what they thought was the right thing, and all of a sudden, there are all these repercussions that they didn't. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you get a guy like Milton Friedman running around in Washington saying, you're the guys that are causing it. You're the ones that got to stop it. And they didn't know what the hell he was talking about. But he just finished the monetary history of the United States. But even so, people at that level of economic knowledge would know that if you double the amount of money in the system, you're going to double the prices. I mean, duh. Yeah. It's pretty simple. But now it's like the third or fourth time this has happened. I don't buy that it's random anymore. It's just regular good guys like Jerome Powell, you know, not seeing inflation coming fast enough, and maybe he thought it was supply chain this and that kind of BS. Come on, I don't buy that the third time through. Is it just me being grumpy or what?
Well, again, I don't know if it has to be coordinated. They just have to all think alike, because the herd, you know, everything's great in the herd. Everybody's making money when the Fed is printing it, and everybody says, don't fight the Fed. I think if everybody's in that herd, it appears from the outside that they're working together. I think if you just have this group think, this modern monetary Keynesian group think, this is the result. And if everybody's trained in that religion, and I call it a religion because they don't allow you to debate, they marginalize everybody outside of their little, you know, their religion. So it's not science. It's not economic science. It's a religion. So if everybody's baptized in that religion, well, guess what we're going to have? We're going to have central banks printing money and governments, you know, running deficits. That's what's going to happen. So I don't think it necessarily has to be, you know, where they're actually working together, right? I mean, they could be working together. We don't know, right?
I think they are. I mean, yeah. I honestly think they are. I mean, I don't see how... I mean, they're smart enough to know that, you know, Christine Lagarde or whatever, and you know, that she's not going to say that they're going to raise interest rates by 3 points a day after the Fed cuts theirs. I mean, there's some communication there somehow. It's not just
in
the ether.
Our government is supposedly anti-cartelling behavior, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All these central banks, if these central banks were private businesses and some politician or some government bureaucrat looked at them objectively and thought, wonder what's going on over here. It seems like they're kind of working together, right? But I mean, honestly, it could be, you know, you're a gas station owner. You can check out your competitor's gas stations just by walking in and looking around. I mean, in competitive markets, prices tend to equate roughly at the same levels. But, you know, it could be the case that they are colluding. I mean, they do present and conference together. They probably email each other. They're probably DMing each other. I mean, so I wouldn't be shocked if they were. But my point is, they don't need to, because they all have the same economic thought. They all are in this orthodoxy that, you know, government debt is great. We can print money to paper over it. And I think they've discovered from doing that that they've gotten really, their friends and themselves have really benefited from it, while 80% of Americans are getting crushed by it.
Well, somewhere as I complete my cleaning here, I have a piece of paper that I should have not put away. I should have put it up on a wall and sent it to everybody. It had to do with, this is memory, 1950 to 1975 or something. And they cut the society into 20% chunks. So there was five chunks of people. The bottom 20%, the next, blah, blah, blah. So every one of them advanced something like 25 or 30% in the period of however many years it was, 15 or 20 or something.
Yeah.
And in fact, the people at the lower end went slightly faster than the people at the upper end. But everybody
you
grew.
Have that.
Everybody grew incredibly. You know, I mean, it was that kind of a. But it's also probably one of the only times in history that's happened anywhere, not just here.
Actually, it wasn't. I read an article by Murray Rothbard that he wrote a while ago about the carpenters in the Boston, Massachusetts colony. They were being paid more than the people running the colony. And so what they did, they can't have that. They can't have carpenters who are building houses making more money than the people that run the colony. So they capped wages. They put in a maximum cap. And what they found out is the carpenters went somewhere else and there was nobody to build the houses. So they got rid of the caps. And then again, carpenters came in, wages really, really high, making more money than the people running the colony. They don't learn from history. They capped those wages again. So you can't have these elites that, you know, maybe they are behind the scenes pulling the levers on the economy and on policy. They can't have that, Tom. You know, they can't have that in the 50s and 60s, right? They gotta maybe rig the system in a way where they and their pals, you know, benefit mightily from what this government's doing, what its central bank is doing.
Well, the next 30 years, it was just the opposite. Virtually all the gain was in. But the interesting part, you know, was not just that the top 20% got virtually all the gains, but the top 10% of the top 20%, if you took them out, that's why a lot of times on the show I'll say, you know, that somebody's making $60,000 a year or something, and which, you know, I mean, and all of a sudden they're, you know, they're having inflation is kicking them in the behind a little bit or a lot, and they look at somebody in the burbs, maybe the husband and wife together are making 2.25, and they've live, I won't say extravagantly, but they live accordingly. I mean, they got a nicer house, two cars. The same inflation is sticking them in the behind, almost the same ratio it is the guy making 60.
Yeah,
it's not. I mean, it's not like that. The top 20% are all going even on themselves. It has to do with what kind of assets you have, what stocks you own. You see people that have gone from, you know, the example I use, and she's probably a very nice lady. Who the hell knows? But you look at what happened to the lady who bought the Mark Cuban thing. She's the daughter of the guy from Las Vegas Sands, right? Mm-hmm. I think, I'm not positive. I think he croaked. I'm not sure on that. I should have looked for it. If he did, all the stock that she has from the place, she has to pay no income tax on it, right? So if his basis was $1 a share and she sells it as 100, she pays nothing, which is on his step up when somebody dies, if you transfer an asset, which I think is a little bit bizarre, but anyway. So she takes that money and now buys a hunk of Mark Cuban's basketball team. We're trading wealth dollars here. The lady never earned. I'm not saying anything's wrong. I'm saying this is a whole difference. Right now, if you look at wealth accumulation, it's not somebody making $100 a week and living on 80 and putting 20 in the bank. It's transfer of wealth. If your dad bought the right stock or something or his house, it's not the same as people earning it on their own. How many people that you know come out of college, especially if they have any kind of student loan debt, after 10 years of working, are able to buy a house or a car? It's rare, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just think about this. In the third quarter of 2008, there was $21 billion in checkable deposits and currency held by the top 1%, right? $20 billion. That's a lot of money. And that's the month that the Federal Reserve started it, or that's the quarter thereafter is when the Fed started paying interest on reserves, which I have said for years is a price floor on the federal funds rate. And they had to do that because they're about ready to drive the federal funds rate negative. I mean, well, they're going to buy all this mortgage-backed security because they put a price floor on mortgage-backed securities. So they're going to buy $600 billion
yep.
in mortgage-backed securities, you know, in the 6 month period, and that would have drove the federal funds rate negative because it's a massive open market purchase. So in the quarter before they put in interest on reserves, $21 billion were held by the top 1% in their checking accounts and currency. They don't publish the series anymore. They don't update it. But in the first quarter of 2022, that was $1.3 trillion. It's a vertical line basically from just before the pandemic. And it probably still going up. But they stopped publishing it in the first quarter of 2022. Why did they stop publishing it? Because it probably looks even worse than it is today. What? I mean, it's the hockey stick of hockey stick of hockey stick.
But is it? It is. All right, so what's... I think a lot of people, even if we talk to them for 30 seconds, understand that's. I mean, I'm looking right here. Median income. This is of a person. Now, again, there's a. Here, I never thought I'd see this bifurcation. Now, as if you look at median income of people that work full time, I think it's like upper 40s, but the median income of everybody is 39.6, because people are not working full time. I don't know if you listened yesterday. Nancy's doing a mortgage for somebody. The guy's guaranteed 20 hours a week. On a good week, he might get 30.
Wow.
What the hell kind of job is that? Anyway,
maybe it's a job where the employer can't afford the government-mandated health insurance.
Well, I mean, but I'm saying what happens, I don't think all Walmarts do this, but the one in Porter, I don't know if they still do it, when the employees told me, oh, yeah, if we're really slow on a week and there's not a lot of customers on a Wednesday, they'll tell me to stay home on Thursday. I go, wait a minute, so... I can't just take your hourly rate and multiply it by 40. He goes, oh, no.
When I worked at Sears selling tires, they scheduled me for 35 hours a week. And I always wondered why they did that. They scheduled me for 35. And, now I know why. Because they didn't want me, if I had to stay an extra hour a day, then I'm getting close to working overtime. And then they got to pay me time and a half.
Yep.
And so I think that's that right there, that just that fact is how tight the margins are for lots of businesses.
Well, but they have to pay
that fact. And now they're saying you can't work, we want you to work at 20 hours a week. And so people have these two part-time jobs. Why? Because the margins are really tight. And if they hire that person at full time, they got to cover their health insurance.
Well,
making the margins even worse.
But the, I'm staring at it, let me lob this one out here. But the median income now is 39. Again, this is not for full time. This is everybody. 39.6. Median income in 2000 was 31. All right. Now, median new home now is 408. In 2000, it was 165. Okay. Average new car now, this is not median, this is average, 48.9 versus then it was 22.3. So, what is it? Those? All they have to do is read those three numbers to you, and how's the average guy doing? And yet we put so much money.
Getting crushed.
I mean, we put so much money in the system that I could argue if you were to say, "Gee, Chief, I think that the economy's not doing so well." I could lob numbers at you and you at me, showing because of the money in the system, you can't trust any number. Of course, if you just cheat on the PCE deflator, it looks like we're doing great, right? Yeah. Because there's so much.
But Tom, this is an insight I had yesterday. We keep hearing about how there's millions and millions of job openings, right? They're not being fulfilled. They're just open, and there's not enough people to fill them up. And I've been reading articles about people applying for work. They'll apply for 1,000 jobs, and then they'll interview, and 300 people are interviewing for that one job, and one person gets hired. I was talking to my brother last night about that, and I came to the realization that I think it's a one big fat lie. Why? Because they want these foreign visas. They want to increase that. So they have to make it look like this labor market is so strong that they have these, you know, 10 million job openings that they cannot fill. And I think what they do is they and I'm just guessing here. If I'm wrong, I'm exchanging a bad opinion, and hopefully somebody will exchange an opinion that is more grounded in evidence. But right now I'm just exchanging an opinion. I think this is a big fat lie, and I think it's driven by this need to import this really inexpensive labor from other countries. Now, I'm open to that, right? I'm open to that, but I'm not open to the lie, right? I just don't see how there can be possibly 10 million openings.
Well, Dan, I know, it's a while
and
ago.
Persist forever.
Hell, I'll try and remember to ask Dan on Thursday, but in the midst of this mess and the COVID with all these openings, yeah. Dan has a buddy in Florida that evidently must have nothing to do for a day. I guess I'll put that one out there. He went to all these places, and he took like 15 of the signs in the window and stuff, and he called and applied, and he never heard back from anybody. I think part of it is when they realize they have to pay somebody $15 an hour, they're constantly open for somebody to show up in case somebody wants to work for 12. I don't think they actually need anybody, but there's a guy, wait, talk about it crazy, but I'll be brief here. I go to the store every Sunday morning in the burbs because I get all my stuff done right. And we still cook in the office here, I do, for people for breakfast because all the breakfast joints down here are still closed after COVID, for God's sake.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, I get the same guy who's at the cashier every Sunday. And of course, I got his whole life story, right? Imagine that, me talking to somebody. The guy is a...
You know, Tom, I do the same thing.
Oh, yeah. It's almost like we're cub reporters for Stocks and Jocks or something. I don't know. So I talk to the guy. I've known this guy now for, it's got to be 5 years.
Yeah.
The dude has interviewed everybody, every place. And he's always, somebody comes through the thing, and it's always the Orland Park Police Department needs a clerk, or they need somebody to take evidence from one place to the next. The guy's over 65. I mean, but he can do stuff like that. Because a lot of that stuff goes on in these police departments and these villages and so forth. Hey, you know, take this evidence we've got down to the crime lab or something, you know, type of thing. I mean, I bet he's interviewed for 25 jobs. Mm. I keep on him to write about. Hell, there's never been a job there at any one of these things because they're already covered. There's no way you're going to get a plum job like that without knowing anybody in the county in the county next to you. I'm way too much Chicago to know that, but don't send nobody to no. We don't want nobody to nobody sent. Isn't that the term? And the guy says you got to write, but it's always 2 and 3 and 4 interviews and then no, 2 and 3. But even if they're not hiring, the people whose job it is to hire people just keep interviewing people.
Yeah,
I don't think there's ever been a job there. But any one of these things, I bet he's interviewed at 5 counties, 4 police departments, 3 villages, every one of those places, and everybody comes through the aisle, I got the recommendation from the police chief in Will County or something. I should get this one. It's for like a guy that helps out in the court or manages the mail coming into the village or something. All of a sudden, he never gets anything. The guy's made a career out of this. I said, you got to write a book. The book will sell. I'll help you proofread it. Do something. SB Futures up 10. SB's up 55. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JAX. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjax@live.com.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomo Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 52. Individual stocks in the Dow. We got Merck. Well, it had climbed back to up, but now it's back down $3. They came out with pretty good earnings, but people don't like it that much, evidently. Even though it was up for a tad there for a second. Goldman Sachs up 220. Other than that, it looks like a day before the Fed announcement, because it is the day before the Fed announcement. We're going to ask Hal when we come back about this. Out of all the stuff that goes on in the world, and we got all these things with the, you know, too many immigrants, not enough immigrants, whatever it is, a lot of the problems seem to be starting in Venezuela. And there's huge protests now over this election. I'm going to get Hal's opinion on that. The best thing that could happen is for that guy to be out of office. I don't know, it's an instant cure, but that guy's got to go. And I have a feeling he's not going to go, even if he lost. Just saying. Over in Asia.
Did you hear about the election that they just had?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The guy's declaring victory, and the other guy says, "I don't think you won," and the place is erupting.
Yeah, it's like apparently he has control over who's actually like doing the counting of polls and all that. It's disgusting, man.
But the guy needs to go. The whole world would be better off.
Definitely so.
Nikkei up 57.1%. Hang Seng down 235. Almost, it's 1.4%. Almost under 17,000, but hanging in there, 17,002. Shanghai down 12, it's another 0.4%. 28.79, can I get back to 2,900, where I think they'd love to be. Over in Europe, DAX up 72.4%, FTSE down 13.2%, CAC around up 28.4%. Yesterday, again, was a snoozer. Dow was down 49, S&P up 4, NASDAQ up 12. Bonds, unchanged now. We were down before. 4.18 in the 10-year. 2.36 again unchanged on the Bund. Japan is back to 1%. They had just ducked under it. Now they're 1% even. Their central bank is meeting today and tomorrow as well. Oil down 37 cents, 75.44. Makes you wonder why gas is going up, because that was like 83. I'm going to say two Tuesdays ago. Professor Hal probably can concur on that. Brent down 46 cents, 79.32. Natural gas down 3 cents, $2 exactly. So we'll see if they go under $2 again. Haven't done it in a while, but they've done it a few times. Gold was up 10, now it's up 7. Silver up 12 cents, 27.99. Copper down 4 cents, 403. Foreign exchange, the yen is weakening just a little. The euro is 108.1, which has been, that's kind of steady. British pound 128.3. The Japanese yen 154, I'm going to call it 155. It's actually a little stronger today. I don't know what this headline says. It's weakened. It's actually up a little. We have first traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. 73 degrees right now with a high of 87. Warm and humid with times of clouds and sun. Wildfire smoke will cause the sky to be hazy today. Tonight will be partly cloudy and humid. A heavy thunderstorm late with a low of 72 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 90 degrees right now with a high of 108. Very warm with sunshine and patchy clouds. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 88 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 39 minutes. Looking at 46 minutes, inbound Edens from Lane Cook. 38 minutes, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 22 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 31 minutes. MLB yesterday. The Cubs lose to the Reds 7-1, White Sox lose to the Royals 8-5, and the Diamondbacks beat the Nationals 9-8. Today we got back-to-back games, Cubs versus the Reds 6:10 p.m., White Sox play the Royals at 7:10 p.m., and the Diamondbacks play the Nationals at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, the Olympic medal tracker states that the U.S. is currently at first place with 20 gold medals, France is second place with 16, and Japan and China are fighting third place with 12 medals both. I'll back over to you, Chief.
So, Ricardo and Hal, if you guys wanted to go to the Olympics and see some of it and not go to Paris, where could you go?
My living room, just watching on TV.
No, I mean if you want to go in person.
I wouldn't want to go in person. I'm a lot like my stepfather now. I'd rather just watch it on TV.
What, are you becoming a couch spud in front of our very eyes?
I just watch it on TV. I got a nice HD, high-definition TV. It's like 6 feet wide.
Oh, God.
If I'm drinking a nice cold beverage,
if it's that big, why don't you
myself? I just put it on pause.
If it's that big, why don't you put it in the garage, turn it on, and go sit in the car and watch it from the driveway, and believe you're at the drive-in. If it's that big,
I could. You know, my cousin Adam, he has an outdoor. He made this outdoor screen, and they watch movies on the lawn, on his lawn, right? The neighborhood comes over to watch, like, you know, Mighty Ducks 2 or something on this big screen with this projector he has. He'll do that like every Saturday night during the summer.
Well, I have some distant family members that somehow or another did very well selling some company in the dot-bomb thing, even though the company wasn't a dot-bomb place, which is even more bizarre. The guy has RV spot number one. It's the company's, the family's original business in the RV business. And he's got this RV bus that is all tricked out to go to football games and baseball games for Ohio State.
Oh, wow.
And the one side of the bus must have a 10-foot screen or 8-foot. It's huge. But a big canopy. And if they bring a bunch of people, they don't all go to the game. They can just sit there and watch the game. It's a huge screen. It's like, okay then. The reason why I asked this question is you could have gone to Tahiti. You might ask yourself, the surfing evidently is in Tahiti. Because I turned on the other day on Sunday, because Audrey of course wants to watch the equestrian. She loves horses, and it says equestrian and surfing. And I'm going, how the hell do you surf in Paris, right? unless they got something making waves in a dirty ass river they've got.
They got these wave machines on these cruise ships now. You can just go watch the Olympics on a cruise ship. All you can eat, all the food is included in the price of boarding. And then if you want to go surfing, you can just surf on the wave machine.
Well, but I mean, evidently it's being held in Tahiti, which is still, is that a French colony still?
Maybe it is. I mean, I think technically, because like everything, west of the Mississippi was French territory at one point.
They
kept talking about how Clinton was like eligible to run for prime minister of France. I mean, I kept hearing that.
It reached all the way up, but it didn't. It didn't include like California and stuff because that was already separate.
Yeah. California was part of Mexico, but Idaho. There's evidence of it being a French colony.
I don't know how far up it went.
French.
Well, you know, that was a rigged deal.
Yeah.
When the Spanish, I believe, Ricardo, I'd want to dig this one up. Read up the Louisiana Purchase. I think that when the Spanish kicked that off over to the French, we bought it from the French, right?
Yeah.
I believe in their agreement.
Bought it from Napoleon, I believe.
Yeah, I believe in their agreement was if the French ever wanted to sell it, they had to give the Spanish right of first refusal.
Hmm.
And we bought it, and they just gave them the dough, and it was ours. And there was yet another contract that people would pay a whole hell of a lot of attention to. Possession, nine-tenths of the law, as they say.
Tom, I got a question for you. Is are the fires in California a result of global warming? And that's rhetorical, because I have a funny story for you.
Well, you saw the one got started.
Yeah, California, the name California means hot furnace. And the reason why they named it that is because they noticed that during the summer there would be these wildfires everywhere. And native peoples of California used to do controlled burns, you know, 200-300 years ago. When Lewis and Clark went to Astoria, they talked about skies of orange filled with smoke and whatnot. So this thing, the whole thing in California that is all happening now because of global warming is just ridiculous. It's in the name California. It's been well known for centuries that California burns. Out west, things burn out west. It's not like the east. These forests are, they burn down, and the burning of the old growth creates a healthier forest, right? So this is well known. What we've done is we made it worse. We're Keynesians when it comes to forest management out west. We put out all these little fires that nature wants because you have these really wealthy people living in these mountain communities. We got to protect their homes. We put out all these fires. We don't allow any logging. And so what happens is all these old forests the deadwood piles up in them, and we are shocked when nature burns one down, or we're shocked when some yahoo lights firecrackers into an area and we have a big massive wildfire. Right?
You saw what the one idiot did. The guy's car was on fire.
During the pandemic, there was a guy.
Oh, you didn't hear the guy's car was on fire. It was on the side of the road, so he shoved it into the gully, on fire. What an idiot! What an idiot!
Yeah. Well, during the pandemic, there was a report of a guy driving through the Washington State and Oregon State, shooting fireworks into forest, right? So, but the whole point is the West is a hot furnace during August, and it's normal for these fires to burn down. And the Native Americans, before white people came, before the Spanish came, before the English came, they had control burns in California. They did.
How does somebody without a? Did you ever see people do a control burn? It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, if you go up on the Palouse in eastern Washington, they'll do controlled burns on their pea fields. Occasionally, they'll control burn their pea fields after they do the harvest.
All right. So, let me get this straight. I mean, I'm not arguing for the sake of arguing, but on the National Lakeshore down in Indiana, right? I mean, it's National Lakeshore, duh. And there'll be signs saying, fire risk high, low, medium. And I go by there one day, and they're doing a controlled burn on maybe like an acre or two, because there's a lot of leaves, right? So that's a problem. So they're doing this controlled burn. Carl, they're probably doing 2 or 3 acres. They must have had 7 or 8 fire trucks all around that thing watching any spark that might have gone somewhere.
Yeah.
How the hell did the Native Americans pull that off, a controlled burn?
Well, Native Americans didn't have million-dollar homes.
Well, I know, but they lit it up and got out of the way and hope it didn't come after them, or what?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying what I've read about Lewis and Clark going west and seeing these skies. I mean, if you're in Lewiston, Idaho today, where my brothers live, Lewis Clark Valley, Lewiston, Idaho, Clarkson, Washington, you look up, or you're in Utah, you look up and the sky is orange from all the smoke from the California wildfires. Well, Lewis and Clark observed that on their trip. They saw that. And so that's why California is named the way it is. It's a former Spanish colony, right? It was a Spanish territory. They named it California, hot furnace.
Well, just as a little aside on that, one of my good buddies, well, I haven't seen him in a while, but we're still good buddies. He just retired a few years ago from NOAA, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric. What amazing stuff this guy had worked on in his lifetime. Remember when we were all had all his issues with ozone holes?
Yeah.
And they would fly the DC-8s, those big old planes, over and then do all the charting of the old ozone holes. He was one of the guys who was always on one of those planes. And they went from there to doing studies on carbon dioxide and things like that. And he was the one that, on the show once in a while I get to talk about something I know about. Well, this I know about from him is that everybody thinks that, like, the Brazilian rainforest, because you don't want to lose it, because it's unique. But is it the idea that it creates all this oxygen isn't true. They've flown over all these areas on Earth, and this got permission of everybody to do it. He said most areas become an equilibrium. Yeah, you've got a gazillion huge trees and plants down there creating more oxygen than you can think of, and yet the ground, everything's decaying, and there's how many termites they are basically eating and creating carbon dioxide. So if you go over it, it's pretty much equilibrium. It's the same, whatever oxygen being 18% or whatever it is of the atmosphere as it is anywhere. It gets in that equilibrium.
And I think carbon dioxide is 0.02% or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And he said, but then all of a sudden, they 2 or 3 years after all those fires they had in Yellowstone way back, was all the big thing, all the areas that burned down in Yellowstone, they had, again, same thing you're talking about. Did they not do enough maintaining? Did they not? They didn't have any fires there at all. Remember Yogi? Who's the guy? Who was the bear? Only you can prevent.
Yogi Bear.
Yeah.
Hey, boo boo.
Yeah. No, the other one. Who was the bear that was always only you can prevent forest fires?
Oh yeah. Oh, Smokey the Bear.
Smokey the Bear. So yeah. So all of a sudden the thing breaks out. This has to be. Carter, do me a favor. Look in Google Yellowstone wildfires. I'm going to say 2005, maybe, something like that.
Wildfires 2005, what was
it? Well, no, just put Yellowstone Park wildfires and see what year it was, see how far off I am. Anyway, so they're taking the plane and they fly it over Yellowstone. All of a sudden, the oxygen meter goes flying. They thought there was something wrong with the equipment. But evidently, when it's all new growth, the amount of oxygen is to the moon because there's nothing decaying.
Huh.
So
it's measuring oxygen relative to CO2.
Yeah, relative to nitrogen and CO2. It's about its percentage in the atmosphere and in the air. And he goes, so I said, what if you wanted to deal with CO2 and all those other kinds of things? What's the easiest thing you can do? He goes, that's real simple. Every year, countrywide, let's plant 1 million trees, new growth trees.
Yeah.
We don't do anything like that. There are always these massive solutions, but that's the easiest thing you can do.
Yeah.
You know, but
Eastern Seaboard, I learned this when I moved to North Carolina back in 2004. I was having a conversation with my economics colleagues, and he was saying that right before the discovery of crude oil, the whole Eastern Seaboard was deforested because that was the number one source of energy, firewood, right? Firewood and water power from, mills, right? And so everything you see on this Eastern Seaboard in terms of trees is relatively new growth.
So there's another reason for that.
So in the discovery of crude oil, it led to the reforestation of the eastern half of the United States, which is a good thing, right?
Well, I think the other part of that is, and I've just been reading this lately, a lot of the deforestation was due to the disease that hit the chestnut trees.
Oh, wow.
Some huge amount of the tree population anywhere east of the Mississippi used to be chestnuts. So now there's like none left.
Yeah.
So one of the big things everybody's doing, because they used to eat chestnuts. The chestnuts on an open fire. When's the last time you saw a chestnut? Evidently, there's a...
Well, if everybody's harvesting chestnuts, then the seeds that could drop into the ground to grow a new chestnut tree would be reduced, right?
Well, but they have some kind of disease. And actually... Mm-hmm. There was a thing on one of the channels I was watching a couple weeks ago, how these guys somewhere in Indiana, they're getting all these different chestnut trees from around the world, and they're trying to splice one together, gene one up, that is resistant to this whatever this blight is we have here.
Wow.
And they think they might actually have gotten a few, but evidently it's a spectacular tree. And by the way, chestnuts are evidently great to eat. They were not only for squirrels, but for people. You could live in the wintertime on the chestnuts if you wanted to out in the woods, but now of course you can't. I had no idea, but it was some massive number of percentage of the trees in some of these areas were chestnut trees, and there's like none left. So that was sort of part of it. But we gripe about what the Fed has done and what these other guys have done. And we kind of gripe about what it's done to different sections of the population. It's never even, and I don't think there's anyone really that can debate with us what has happened and how it shouldn't have been allowed to happen, okay? Because this is not something new. I mean, you could have figured out that if you're going to do this, there's going to be massive winners and losers, and you can predict who the hell they were, right? But now we're here, and this happened in this country kind of once before, and was during the 1920s. And all of a sudden, one day, the one percenters that had all the stack. Everybody says everybody had stock in those days. That's total BS. Something like less than 7%. There was no 401ks. There was no IRAs. Less than 7% of the country had stock.
Most of the people at the beginning of that were, didn't have air conditioning, didn't have a car.
Well, I mean, then you see a Duesenberg. A Duesenberg was like, what, 12, 13, 14 grand back then? Can you imagine what that would be?
Cars
like
were a thing of rich people.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, he had the Model A's, the Model T's, but people...
Well, my grandpa was telling me that he had a Model T, and in order to go over Malad Pass, it's that mountain pass between Utah and Idaho, he had to go up it backwards. I don't think that Duesenberg had to do that.
No, the reverse was the lowest gear.
Yeah, so he would always go backwards up that mountain pass.
Yeah, because reverse was lower than first. Did you ever see a video on what it takes? You and I, maybe you could... being the engineer that you are, it would take us a long time to start a Model T. You had to do all kinds of stuff. So you had to be holding this, holding that, cranking this. I mean, it was not like...
Well, but it was a very simple mechanism compared to cars today.
Yeah, but it was not...
Fire,
it was not,
oxygen.
It was not easy to start.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the what my
yeah, but people back then were really tough, right?
Oh yeah,
they
well.
Were really tough. Today, well, we're upset if we don't have a fingernail clipper. Right?
Well, yeah,
back
gotta,
then those yeah. those people were tough, man.
Well, oh no, no question. But the where was I going with this? If you make a long story short, don't tell it, right? you know, well, anyway, to get back to the oxygen stuff, he said one problem we have is that if the carbon dioxide goes up even a little bit in the ocean can't get rid of it like you can on land.
Yeah.
The ocean has a problem with it. But, no, but I remember back, it happened in 1929, where maybe other than today, the top 1% had a higher, maybe had a higher percentage of the wealth than now. And the solution to that, solution's a really bad term, was the stock market crash. The only problem was that it took the banks out, which took the savings out of all the rest of the people as well. Now, I think most of us might agree that there needs to be a little coming toward the median here. But I don't want to see the market crash and us go that way. I mean, I'd sure rather see the market stabilize while for the next 2 or 3 years everybody gets, you know, a reasonably decent wage increase and we start gaining on the bubble in prices. That's how I'd like to see it happen. I mean, clearly if the market were to go back 60%, that would solve a lot of the wealth bubble, wouldn't it? Especially if houses turn around and went from 400,000 back to 300, our wealth bubble would be, I guess, solved. But I don't want it solved that way. Do you? I mean, I'd rather have people grow into it. But I don't see that happening at all. Do you?
I don't see it happening either. I think the way you solve these issues is, one, you have to change the. I mean, the Fed's here to stay. So let's just be real. You have to change their mandate. They have to just manage M2 growth. I mean, that would be the less worse. Goal is just to manage M2 growth the best they can.
I would agree with that, but it makes so much sense to say manage inflation. Well, no, we're going to create inflation. We're going to lie about it. Well, no, that's not what we asked you to do. We're going to create inflation of 5% a year. We're going to tell you it's 2. Okay.
By the way, I think the last law that was passed, or resolution that was passed by Congress, it was in the 80s about inflation, and the Federal Reserve was supposed to keep inflation at 0. I think I came across that one.
How many people in Congress are making out like a bandit on this? Because look what their wealth does while they're in there.
Oh yeah, they're doing well. I mean, they know who's getting the contract, so I'm sure they slip the Lockheed contract to their spouse while talking in their sleep.
As much as you know, I mean, most of the people on the show, I think, are pretty conservative. I'm in the middle. But I was very relieved, and I'm not going to say I'm voting for her. I'll probably vote for the whatever, somebody else. I might vote for you, Hal. But I was very relieved to see Harris's investment portfolio over the last 5 or 6 years, and it's passive ETFs. No trading on COVID, none of that stuff like all these other people are doing. I'm thinking, you know, I may not like her for a lot of reasons, but at least there's one I'm not worrying about. I was pretty relieved to see that. She wasn't one of these that was every time there was an insider trade, she was all involved in it. So that's...
Well, maybe that's by design.
That's what you're supposed to do when you're out there, right? Yeah. But nobody else... Well, I won't say nobody, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
I mean, what's his name? Cheney was trading the whole time as Kellogg, Brown, and Root, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Cheney... Hasser,
Pelosi,
they're all trading on it.
Who's the lady that her husband's the head of the ICE? Was it the ICE? She was the senator the blonde one. She was the wealthiest person in the Senate.
Oh, the one from Atlanta.
Yeah, she didn't run again. I don't think.
Yeah,
but
she ran against the current senator of Atlanta in a special election, right? She lost.
There's no special election for the Senate.
Well, no, they had the special election. She was appointed. I think she served 2 years. And then they had this big runoff election.
I think she lost the primary, didn't she? Or did she lose the general? I'm not sure.
She lost in general to the current senator. I think she only served maybe a couple years because I think she was appointed.
Oh, she served long enough to be on a committee. When she found out what was wrong with COVID, she sold all her stock.
Yeah.
God.
Well, you know, if you remember the Boston Marathon bombing, I read an article about around that time, they had a voice vote on the Stock Act, which was a crackdown on members of Congress and their staff trading on insider political information. And it was like a voice vote, right? So there's no recorded, you know, votes. And it won 80-20. So that tells you something about the real partisanship of the Senate. I think a lot of it is smoke and mirrors.
That's why whenever
they tend to hate each other on the camera.
Whenever I see people, sometimes we degrade into a political discussion on the show. Whenever I see people arguing right versus left.
Yeah, I think it's us versus them. I think it's the taxpayer.
Absolutely, it's us versus whoever's really running it.
And you know, Mark said it wrong. You know, it's not the worker. You know, workers of the world unite. It's not the conflict between worker and capitalist. It never has. It's the conflict between the state, the tax receivers of the net receivers of the tax receipts versus the people who pay the taxes.
Without a doubt. And it's
that's what Robin Hood was, right? Robin Hood, if you watch the movie Robin Hood with the guy from Australia, I love this movie. Russell Crowe.
Wait a minute. Robin Hood is so good. Wait a minute.
It was the poor versus the government, the government of the day, the king and all the nobles who were protected by the king, right? It was them. It was the government versus
Ricardo. We're gonna have to cut Hal off because there's only one Robin, and that was Errol Flynn.
I'm telling you, this Robin Hood movie is so good. You feel like you're there.
You liked it? Wasn't Tom Cruise a Robin Hood too?
No, that was Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
But I think
it's the best Robin Hood movie of all time because you feel like you're there, and you know what the true conflict was. It was the taxpayers versus the net receivers of taxes.
But you didn't have the sword fight with Basil Rathbone for Guy Gisborne.
But his bow and arrow work was incredible in that movie. Plus, the guy that played Little John, he's the Luke Skywalker character in the latest trilogy of Star Wars.
Who was the guy that played in the original one? A big, huge dude. What was his name?
Who?
In the original one, Errol Flynn.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't watch the Errol Flynn version.
How could you not? Good Lord.
You got to watch this Russell Crowe.
I'll make a deal with you. I'll watch that one, but you got to watch the Errol Flynn one. Right. Good Lord. Anyway, S&P futures up 9. NASDAQ futures up 60. Back tomorrow. Hell, you're always the best, buddy. Take care of yourself. Right. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Bye.
That's all, folks.